One of the very strange things that has happened in this world of ours is that some 1935 years ago, a man walked this earth and raised the dead. This had a meaning for us, perhaps beyond anything that men have dared to imagine. And this meaning was buried in such a way that we have now come to praise the activity with no thought whatsoever of emulating that activity. None of us have taken it upon ourselves to say, because he raised the dead, I too must learn how to do this. And as a matter of fact, it is this very praise of the deed which has buried it. We have very calmly witnessed miracles and have said, the Son of God did these miracles. And then having made that mental commitment to say that he was the Son of God, you wouldn't expect me to do the same. We have laid it aside on the shelf. So much so that wherever Billy Graham goes these days, there's a great big conclave about the second coming. The second coming, because the first was misunderstood. The first demonstration of the resurrection of the dead being misunderstood, and orthodoxy having now taken and deified him who raised the dead, it is as if it were saying, you don't expect us to do it. We're not virgin-born sons of God. We're just the church. Don't look at us for anything like that. But wait until Jesus Christ returns to earth again. And then you will see the same miracles. And those who have sinned, this will happen and that will happen. And you know that all of our youth who was being brought up to believe in this rubbish is being submitted to the same lie that has been perpetuated through the centuries, which has led finally to a place in history where man is unable to govern himself intelligently. He has found that no power in medicine and in science can prevent disease. He has found that no agreement between nations can prevent war. He has found that no commercial agreements can be reached to prevent poverty and starvation. The human mind is exposed as being incapable of preventing the war, the pestilence, the disaster, the various sufferings of this world. Nor can prayer to the Father remove these sufferings. And because of this, complete unawareness of the message of the resurrection of the dead, man has fallen to that position where he regards himself as a person who must die. He would never dream of thinking himself to be anything than a mortal being. And there is no one in the church who is trying to persuade him that he is not a mortal being. As far as the church is concerned, he's not only a mortal, he's a mortal sinner. But something happened on this earth that the infinite way is not about to ignore. We are not about to walk on the other side of the street and close our eyes to it. There was a raising of the dead on this earth, and we too were told to go forth and raise the dead. And we must approach that mission with an understanding of the task. Mortality means to perish. That which is mortal dies. That which is immortal is not perishable. And if we be mortal, we be perishable. And if we be perishable, the brain within us perishes with us. And if we are using now a perishable brain, all that it can perceive, all that it can know, is that which perishes. The mortal sense of life can only know that which is mortal. Mortality cannot glimpse immortality. That which must die can only associate with that which must die. Now let us look at a child of 12 who was dead. Her father's name is Jairus, and he is a nobleman, one of high authority. He apparently was a convert to the Hebrew faith from the Romans, and now, because of his high authority, those of the Hebrew temple are coming to Jesus to persuade him to heal this man's 12-year-old daughter. There was a Hebrew superstition that after 3 days the soul left the body. The silver cord was cut, and never again could that soul re-enter the body. And if you look closely at the various resurrections in the Bible, you will see that Jesus took them one at a time. First, this child who had just died and was still in bed. And then someone who had died a day and a half and was already in the coffin on the way to be buried. And then to break the false Hebrew superstition completely about the 3-day period in which the soul could not re-enter the body after that, he specifically waited 4 days for Lazarus before appearing before the tomb. This was the slow succession of removing completely, for all time, the nonsense about a soul interred in matter, and to reveal something far greater than these baseless superstitions of the mortal mind. Now he had this girl. Yes, she was dead according to the physicians. And mark this very carefully. She could not see or hear or touch or feel or know. Her physical senses were dead. The brain was dead. The heart was dead. The organs were dead. everything in that physical body was dead. So much so that paid mourners were there. Mourning. That was their profession, to mourn for the dead. This was a dead girl, if you believe that there is life in a physical body. Now then, the revelation there, when he said, she is not dead, she sleepeth, is that there is no life in a physical form. There is no life in physical senses. He was looking at that which man called the mortal self. He was looking at you and at me, the mortal self, which man was pronouncing dead. And he said, she sleepeth. He was seeing a life where the world saw death. He was seeing immortality where the world saw mortality. And shall we wait for a second coming before we see it again? Or shall we stand by that bedside now and see what he saw then, but see it now as it is? If you look with dead senses, you're going to see death. But suppose you look with life. Suppose you look with that vision, which is of the spirit. Suppose you first see the eye of your own being before you try to find the eye of another. And so what stood before this bedside? What stood before this girl that was different than everyone else who stood there looking at her? I stood there looking at her. Not a dead physical being, but I, the living Spirit of God, stood there in a form. A form that appeared to people as Jesus, but it was I, the Christ, standing looking at this girl. And what does I, the Christ, see? The immortal I, the immortal Christ, can only behold itself. The immortal I saw the immortal I. And she awakened and asked for food. Now this immortal I in her, awakened by the recognition of it by one who stood in the immortal I, now awakened not only that I, but that I awakened the dead senses. Now those senses were not being governed by chance. Now those senses were not being murdered by the cosmic or the unconscious mind. Now this girl was not a channel for the lie about immortality. The immortal eye of her own being was recognized, and it became the law of her being. And it now animated the senses. It gave her a desire for food. And she was 12. And so we know that as Jesus himself, speaking in the temple at 12, was able to educate the elders, she had gone through the transition of rebirth. And the Christ, in the form of Jesus, and the Christ within her being one and the same, the immortal self now, which had ever been present through centuries of human time, was emerging to take dominion over the false human mind. Now, before Jesus brought us this resurrection of the girl, he very carefully laid the groundwork to show us that where we see through a glass darkly, with a mortal mind, with a mortal consciousness, with mortal senses, there is an invisible life present, which is not mortal, which is not subject to chance, which is not subject to human powers, which is not at the discretion of one individual or a nation or a body of material laws, and through a succession of ascending demonstrations, he took us first to the transformation of matter, water to wine, to demonstrate that matter which can be transformed is not of God. It isn't real. It has no basis because it has no permanence. It can be changed. He demonstrated that there is a consciousness which can take dominion over all of the matter of this world. And then he next demonstrated that the power of the human brain has been grossly exaggerated, and the evidence of the human brain is not reliable. For the human brain declared that this one had epilepsy, and this one had dementia, and this one was insane. But again, that certain something called I, that immortal self, could take dominion over the evidence of the brain and restore the epileptic, the insane, to normalcy, proving the non-power of the brain. And then into the fleshly body to show the non-power of that. We see the lame and the halt and the withered. Again, the claims of the body. The claim that we live in a body of flesh, which has the power to be crippled or lame or sick or diseased. Again, this immortal self takes control over that and removes them from the material laws which claim that the fleshly body can of itself be sick or diseased. This is a mounting demonstration. Next to the incurable diseases, the palsy, the leprosy. And we find again that which is mortal, that which appears and must die, that which we have accepted to be ourself, is subject to a higher power, which takes control over it and restores it to normalcy. All these leading to the King of Terrors, the greatest terror in the world, the fear of death, and showing that mortality is not reality. Mortality can be controlled. But in order for it to be controlled, there must be a recognition of an immortal self within yourself and within the self of the individual who appears to be mortal. And first, the daughter of Jairus. And then the son of the widow at Nain. Now we have a funeral procession, a boy being buried, a widow marching with a funeral. But what does he say? I say, young man, arise. What is the message for you and for me? This mortal self is not what it appears to be. God is immortal. God is all. Now then, if God is all and God is immortal, where can there be anything unlike God? Where can mortality be if God is all and God is immortal? Young man, I say, arise. And then the nobleman's son, the centurion. Now you see it done absently, not even in the presence of the victim. When the centurion says, help my son, and again Jesus doesn't respond instantly, he says, please help him, I know you can. Go thy way, thy son liveth. Why? Because there could be no acceptance of mortality. If there were an acceptance of mortality, then we have an acceptance that God is not all. Who among us has accepted that God is all, God is immortal, and therefore mortality is impossible? That is where we start. It isn't where we end, it's where we begin. Once we have accepted that immortality is the only possibility because God is all, then we must take a second look at what we have thought to be our mortal self. I cannot be mortal, because that's a statement that there is a life apart from God. God is life. God is immortal life. There is no other kind. If I am mortal life, then I have stated that my life and God's life are two different kinds. How can I expect divine life to support that which is not divine life? I've declared myself out of divine law. But now I'm accepting what Jesus was demonstrating, that immortality is the reality of the child that appears dead, of the child that is buried, and now of Lazarus, who was buried in the tomb for 4 days. He wasn't concerned about the soul departing from the flesh and then not being able to return. He knew the soul could not depart from the flesh because there is no mortal flesh there. Now, our 40 days in the wilderness must follow his. And those words, 40 days, mean one thing. As long as it is necessary to come to a conclusion about the truth. So those 40 days could be 400 or 4 million. Depending on how long it is necessary for you to reach that agreement with the truth which permits you to say, there cannot be God spirit and God matter. Matter dies. God is non-dying. And therefore the matter that dies is not of God. There cannot be two worlds, heaven and earth. any more than there can be immortality and mortality. There can only be the kingdom of God. And when I am in spiritual consciousness, that is where I am, in the kingdom of God, in immortal selfhood. Now then, your day in the wilderness is the confrontation with the belief that you are a material mortal being. And if you step out of the wilderness until you have found your answer, you have not had your 40 days in the wilderness. You step out of the wilderness when you know that I am immortal being. And because the flesh is mortal, I am not in the flesh. There can be no quibbling there. As long as you believe you're in the flesh, you have accepted mortality and have not found that I, that immortal self, which the Spirit of Jesus saw in the girl, in the boy, and in Lazarus. That immortal I was there revealed not only as your immortal self, but as the only self on this earth. There is no mortal being on this earth. The revelation of immortality is universal. And you don't have to wait for Jesus Christ to come back to earth. For if you believe on me, the works that I do ye shall do, and greater works shall ye do. This was the total universal revelation, that if you believe on me, and me is that immortal I, which was revealed in the daughter of Jairus, in Lazarus, in the son of the widow at Nain, and later in Jesus himself, if you believe on this immortal I as the substance of your being, then the works that the I did as the living Christ consciousness in biblical days, it is prepared to do now in you and as you. That which Christ consciousness did yesterday, it can and will do today. The nature of Christ consciousness is never a variable. It appeared as Jesus. It resurrected the dead. And by that is meant that it discovered the latent divinity where the world saw mortal flesh. To discover your latent divinity where the human mind had presented the idea of mortal flesh, this is the raising of your own self from the dead. And then to look out in this world on all those around you, regardless of the level of their consciousness, and to address yourself to the immortal eye of their being. This is raising the dead. Now, as this begins to catch on, and you see that the immortal eye was the real healer behind the scenes, that the immortal I is life itself, and once it is recognized, that life begins to overrule the appearance of death, then you do not wait for death in a physical form. You look for life now. You look now for the immortal I of your own being. And this is your 40 days in the wilderness. You go inside to your own I. And there must be a decision reached. Am I mortal? or immortal now? Am I perishable or non-perishable now? What is my status? Who am I? And when you come face to face with your reality, that you are the Spirit of God, then you can see why it was necessary to reveal the immortal eye of those who apparently were dead. Because that immortal eye of them is not mortal flesh, but spiritual selfhood. And the nature of each of us is that our spiritual selfhood has made possible that which appears as our physical selfhood. Behind the mortal appearance is the immortal eye. And when your consciousness rests in the immortal eye and flows forward from that, it governs that which appears as the mortal self. When Paul tells us that this corruptible must put on incorruptibility, this mortal must put on immortality, did he mean wait for a second coming of Christ? When Jesus tells us the kingdom of God is within you, did he say wait till I come back to earth 2,000 years later? He said, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. What was he telling us? That within you, as in him, as in the daughter of Jairus, as in the others, there is the immortal eye. He was revealing the meaning of the Word was made flesh. He was revealing that man on earth must be Christed. He was revealing that the churches on earth must be Christed. He was revealing truth, which belongs to no person and to no one religion. He was revealing the universality of the Christ and the need to accept this in our consciousness is the coming of the Christ into us as the realization of self. It has nothing to do with the second physical appearance of a man. It never has had. And our evangelists, our clergymen, 99% of them are still living in the deadness instead of raising the dead within themselves to the revelation of their immortality and then going forth to bless each individual in their congregations with the recognition of their immortality, to witness the Christ in every man. So it is said, your righteousness must exceed the righteousness of the scribes and of the Pharisees. Because until you perceive the immortal selfhood of your own being, and the immortal selfhood of every individual on the face of the earth, your claim to righteousness is untrue. There is hardly one righteous man on this earth. Because to be righteous, you must look out on a world in which there is nothing that exists that is unlike God. Now that is your immortal consciousness. When you are trained to look out and perceive nothing unlike God, and whatever you perceive that is unlike God, you must raise it from the dead through the recognition of its non-reality, non-power, non-substance, non-law, non-activity. If it is not of God, how can it exist? That which must die is not of God. And so with this early chapter in the Infinite Way, when we first read it, we may not have been impressed with the totality of its revelation. But at this date, we can say this. We were told that we do not live in a human form, and that if we associate our life with a human form, we are associating with that which must die. We were told to be absent from the body and present with the spirit. We were told to recognize within ourselves an eternal flame and to see that our life is a continuity of consciousness with no beginning, no end, not existing in human time, and that our consciousness, being immortal, will ever make use of whatever form seemed necessary at the moment throughout all of our human spans. And this is the consciousness now of the immortal self, which we are told to live in, to abide in, without ceasing. You have your two commandments for that purpose. You are recognizing your own immortal selfhood with all your soul, all your mind, all your body, all your heart, all your strength. And that outlaws the possibility of the physical form being you. It outlaws the possibility of the human mind being you. It takes you out of human mind and human body. Not until you're on a deathbed and someone has to come along to find it. You're finding it yourself. You're accepting the message of the resurrection of the dead demonstrated on earth by the Christ. And you're accepting that if you believe on the presence of this I in you, this I in you will do the mighty works it did then. You're accepting this I as your immortal selfhood. Now you're entitled to say, I and the Father are one. For you have received from the Father the Father's immortal selfhood. Son, all that I have is thine. And the Father further says, don't let any fool on this earth persuade you to wait for the second coming of Jesus Christ. Because I, the infinite self, can never leave thee. I have never left thee. I am with thee always, unto the end of the world. I cannot return because I have never left. This is part of our 40 days in the wilderness. We have the total world conditioning of religion and science and mental sciences to stand up to in the realization that all of the world sees mortality, death, deterioration, aging. But I believe on the inner Christ. And I live out of that belief. And therefore I see the inner Christ of the doctor, the inner Christ of the clergyman, the inner Christ of the physicist, the inner Christ of all those who do not believe on the inner Christ. for they have not learned the message of the resurrection of the dead. The dead, or the sleeping, are those who live in the consciousness of matter, unaware that matter, which must die, is not a creation of God. And if you're going to go through 11 more chapters, if you're going to go through 20, 30, 40, 50 more years on this lifespan, surely this is the moment to come to grips with the idea that I cannot go through it as matter. For that which was not created by God has no real existence. And if I live in matter, as matter, identified as matter, then I am under material law, which is not under the law of God. And that's why you have this as the first chapter. It's the first thing to do. There must be an immortal you. If there is no immortal you, then there is no child of God. There is no spiritual being. It is because of this false teaching, then, and man's unawareness of his immortal eye, that he lives with the sword of Damocles hovering over his head, the fear that this sword will come down and take his human life away, take his physical form away, take his possessions away, or damage him in some way. Around every corner lurks a casualty in man's mind. Most people live with this fear hovering over them. And its undercurrents run through the mind in many ways. We are so easily influenced, not knowing the immortal self. We live in fear of losing the mortal self, which isn't us. And that mortal self is always subject to chance. And so you find the medical profession, the insurance profession, the media, the press, TV, radio, newspapers, all bringing to you the story about mortality. Ever pouring more coal on the fire of fear. Your mortal senses, your mortal mind, will perish. You might as well face the fact that no mortal senses or mortal bodies or beyond that. And therefore, you must also face that your mortal senses and mortal body are not a divine creation. The eyes you look out with were not created by God. The ears you hear with were not created by God. The heart that theoretically keeps you alive was not created by God. The natural man receiveth not the things of God and is not under the law of God. And so no one in this world is under the law of God. There's no sense telling us to wait for the second coming of Christ. While we're waiting, we're not under the law of God. But if so be the Spirit dwells in you, then are you the Son of God? If so be you dwell in spiritual consciousness. Now, Jesus further tells us that that which is born of the flesh is flesh. And mortal. That which is born of the Spirit is spirit. And immortal. Again, are you both? Don't make that mistake. You cannot be both. Choose ye this day whom ye shall serve, the spirit or matter, immortality or mortality, God or mammon. For if you accept birth of the flesh, you are flesh. And then this corruptible is not putting on incorruptibility. But if you accept your spiritual birth as your identity, then henceforth know not yourself after the flesh. I am not of the flesh. I am not born of the flesh. I am not mortal being born to die. And then the truth of your immortal self is the truth that makes you free. Now, what do you have to do to protect your immortal self? Give it a moment's thought. What do you have to do to protect your immortal body, your immortal mind? Can you protect the Spirit? Can you protect the Christ? Can you protect the Christ mind, the Christ life? And if that is you, what protection do you need? If you need protection, then you have more days to spend in the wilderness. You must go back to your wilderness until you can come forth and know that because I am spiritual being, immortal selfhood, Christ and Christ mind, because all that the Father hath, I am. Because I am the truth, I am the way, I am the wine, I am the water, I am the light. That which the Father is, I am. When you know this, you need no protection. And if you have a desire for protection, you are denying your immortal selfhood. And you will be able to judge where you stand by whether or not you feel you need protection. If you can say, I need no protection because the Spirit needs no might or power to defend itself, it recognizes no other life than a spiritual life. Against whom shall it defend? So every time you find you want protection, you are saying, I am of the flesh. I am mortal. I was born of the flesh and will die in the flesh. You have not benefited by the raising of the dead demonstrations of the Christ in the form of Jesus. And you have not raised yourself from the dead beliefs of a material selfhood. Now that is basically part of the essence of the chapter on immortality. It is revealing that God created no mortal being. God is spirit. And there is no mortal being on this earth. That immortality is the true nature of all who walk the earth in the seeming body of flesh. And it is revealing this that you, if you are prepared, may believe on it, may accept it, and then having made the initial steps of acceptance, are prepared to walk as an initiate. In the realization that I, being the immortal self, the one indivisible, spiritual being that walks this earth. Everywhere I will invest my relationships with that understanding. I will never enter into a relationship without first knowing myself to be the immortal self, and then through this, letting myself recognize the immortal self in another. And once this relationship has been established on that basis, that which I have joined together, no man can rend asunder. Whether it be business or marriage, whatever the nature of the relationship be, it is blessed with success because you have brought into it the new dimension of immortality. You have recognized first in you, I, the invisible self. And second, in him or in her, or in it, or the condition, I, the invisible self. This recognition of I as the essence of all that is there assures you of being under divine law as divine activity, secure, protected, for the I will go before that relationship in every way. Now you see, we're taking immortality out of a deathbed in the hills of Galilee. We're bringing it into this moment, into the realization that the immortal I revealed there is the same immortal I that indwells my very being. The same immortal I that indwells the fellow I saw yesterday as some kind of an inferior human being. The same immortal I that indwells every relationship on this earth, but has gone unseen by the mortal eyes of men. When we begin investing that recognition in everything we do with everyone, we are loving our neighbor, and not until then. I cannot love you if I think of you as a mortal being. All I can do is malpractice you that way. If you see me or I see you as mortal beings, we have not learned that we are here to raise the dead, to lift our vision above matter which must deteriorate into the vision of spirit, which is endless and unchanging. And so today is really a beautiful chance for all of us to take the two commandments and to see that as we put them together, we are being told to recognize the immortal I everywhere. In myself, in my wife, in my husband, in my friend, in my child, in my parent, in my business associate, wherever it is, and it is omnipresent, I must recognize it. And preparatory to recognizing it, I must find it in myself. Because I will try to recognize it with a human mind and I will fail. I will have clouds without rain. I will have vain repetitions. I will have affirmations. I will have words without substance. For only the I of my being can recognize the I that indwells every other individual on earth. You must begin with yourself. You must make the change in consciousness from mortal self to immortal self. That's your beginning. And as you feel this I of you recognized, instead of a me, instead of a human brain, you'll know that your days in the wilderness are going to be shorter and shorter. You'll also know that to emerge before this has been completely clarified, until I in you have been born, until Christ in you is realized, until you have recognized the presence of God in you where you stand, you are not ready to go forth and raise the dead. You are not ready to go forth into divine relationships. You are not ready to go forth protected from the world consciousness of disease and disaster. Now let's do that within ourselves now. There is a turning place. A turn ye and live. Turn ye from a person born of the flesh who lives in the flesh as the flesh. And find a place where the human mind is taking no thought. For that human mind is of the flesh. And if you think with that which is of the flesh, you are separated from the spirit. Take no thought for your mortal life, for you never had one. You never had a mortal life. The mortal has been the imitation of the immortal. The material has been the imitation of the spiritual. And right where the imitation appears, I am. I in the midst of you am your immortal life. I in the midst of you am your spiritual self. I in the midst of you am your being, and beside me there is no other. Your name is Spirit, immortal Spirit, without opposite, without a mortal selfhood. And that which appears as your mortal selfhood is a cosmic imitation of I in the midst of you. I in the midst of you am deathless. I am immortal. I will always be yourself. Abide in me, and let me rise in your consciousness as the risen Christ. Let me look out through your eyes at this world, and I will show you my kingdom on this earth. I will show you the immortal kingdom of God on this earth if you will let me look through your eyes. Receive me in your heart. Receive me in your soul.